You are listening to KJZZ's Here and Now in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Phoenix has been called one of the least sustainable cities in the U.S. It's in a desert, and water is bound to run out. We're currently in the midst of an extended drought, and climate change is expected to make that situation worse. So why is attorney and Morrison Institute senior fellow Grady Gamage not worried about this? Or is he just better at hiding his concerns than the rest of us are? His new book is called The Future of the Suburban City, Lessons from Sustaining Phoenix. He'll be at Changing Hands in Phoenix to talk about the book on April 26th, and he joins me now. Hi, Grady.
Hey, Steve. Good to see you.
And joining us by phone from Seattle is John Talton of RogueColumnist.com. He's author of A Brief History of Phoenix. John, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Grady. Congratulations.
Thanks, John. I loved your brief history. I read it just after it came out.
Well, Grady, let's start about writing about a Phoenix that you consider to be highly adaptable. You and I have also discussed, though, in the past, the limited amount of leadership in this area. And I guess water management might be an exception. But how is Phoenix going to actually adapt without great leaders to do this?
Well, I want to correct that I'm not at all worried about the sustainability of Phoenix. I think all cities need to be worried about the impact of climate change. And I do think the single biggest challenge Phoenix faces is sort of the political will to deal with problems. I think it's a problem we have in general in America right now with the sort of breakdown of our political system. But I think the best way to analyze whether a city is sustainable or not is to look at its history and look at its ability to meet challenges in the past. And water is probably the best example of where Phoenix has managed to deal with and manage its way through a complicated water situation for a very long period of time.
Mm-hmm. John, I wonder what you think about water management. Certainly has been something Phoenix has been given credit for. But I want to come back to that leadership question, because there are some people who are concerned that even if a lot of people recognize what the challenges may be, do we have the people in place who are going to recognize that as well and say, this is what we need to do to fix it?
Well, Grady is absolutely right that it is a problem, and it's one nationwide. I hate to even get into the word sustainable because it's almost become a punch word. Grady uses a better word, resilience. And one of the biggest challenges that any city, conurbation, anything you want to call it, faces is how fragile it is. And one of the most interesting challenges that Phoenix faces is a less engaged, more paralyzed federal government. Because without the federal government, we would still be hauling hay to Fort McDowell, and there'd be 12 of us.
Yeah, and one of the great ironies of the West in general is that we think of the federal government as our enemy. I mean, every day in the Arizona legislature, you hear the federal government demonized. But John's right. We couldn't be here without them. It's, you know, Mark Reisner, who wrote Cadillac Desert years ago, said that behind every rugged individualist is a government agency. It's true. And we need to sort of remember that.
Well, so as we're remembering it then, Grady, I don't want to overstate the fact that you're optimistic about this, but based on Phoenix's history, give people a little bit of, and I'll give John a chance, of course, with a brief history of Phoenix as well, but what is it that makes you think that Phoenix has this history of adaptability that a lot of people who've moved in the last 10 years don't know about?
Sure. I mean, let me back up for a minute and just say that I think all cities are challenged with regard to sustainability, and climate change creates challenges for all cities. Mm-hmm. I think the good news for Phoenix is that the challenges are likely to be similar in kind to the challenges we've always dealt with. It's hot and it's dry. We're pretty good at figuring out how to deal with hot and dry. We wouldn't be here but for the invention of air conditioning and the ability to move water great distances through federally financed projects. So the fact that we were able to do that and to deal with the particular challenges of this place, I think creates a sense of optimism for me that we will be able to deal with those challenges in the future. But in contrast, if you think about coastal cities, I won't pick on Seattle, John. I don't know the situation well enough. But think about lower Manhattan. Sea level is projected to rise significantly in the next 20 to 30 years even is the latest statistics. Well, that's a massive challenge of a different kind than lower Manhattan has had to deal with in the last 50 years. And it will be very expensive for coastal cities to deal with challenges of that nature. If you're in Florida, you got sea level rise and you also got hurricanes are likely to increase. We have built a city based on a highly variable water supply and a high degree of variability in temperature and climate. The amplitude of that variability is going to increase in the future, but going from a significant amplitude to an even greater one is easier than going from no expected amplitude of variability to a significant amplitude. So I think that gives us cause for optimism.
John, you want to respond to that?
Well, I think that we don't know. Climate change puts us into real terra incognita. What we do know is that 97% of those scientists who actually study climate say it's getting worse faster than they expected. And yes, it is going to affect every place, and it will affect Phoenix. And so one of the challenges Phoenix faces is discontinuity. John Maynard Keynes said something like, the idea of the future being different from the present is so repugnant to our conventional modes of thought and behavior that most of us offer great resistance to acting on it in practice. And man, that's not an exact quote, but that is America in so many ways. And I think that for Phoenix, we have to remember that past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Phoenix has been through several major crises, the droughts of the 1890s, followed by the floods, and then the Great Depression, which was much worse than most people realize, each time had to be restarted. So I don't think we should be smug. There's a danger that people will get the Grady Gamage for Dummies, which is everything is fine. And what they need to do is read Grady's book, which is a much more nuanced take on things and on the challenges that Phoenix faces, because it's not going to be an easy road. One of the biggest challenges is, will we predicate everything on a high rate of population growth, or can we make a turn into a higher quality economy that is not so dependent on bringing in more people?
John, I greatly appreciate your plugging the actual need to read the book as opposed to just listening to a radio show. It is important, and I appreciate the fact that you actually have read through it. There is a lot of subtlety here, and there's a lot of complexity to managing through these things. And I want to make clear, it's not just about water. The book also tries to deal with the sort of suburban fabric of Phoenix. The title's actually The Future of the Suburban City, because I think there are lessons here for all of the post-war automobile-dominated, single-family home-dominated cities in America, which are often criticized as unsustainable. That is a particular development form related to cheap petroleum is what built those cities. And as we move away from cheap petroleum, we have to think about how that kind of an urban fabric can adapt. We can't just scrap it all and turn everything into Greenwich Village, but I think we can make small adaptive changes over time that will allow that kind of urban fabric to survive.
But Grady, when you've already made a commitment, as this community has in so many ways, to what people would call sprawl, and the fact you have a lot of people living out in the desert and having done these things and have not adapted to and have not really desired to have transportation options, yes, many more people are wanting to live in the inner city, increasing the density. But what about all those people who don't? And some of those people who are only here 6 to 8 months a year?
The problem with snowbirds is one I don't really deal with in the book, frankly. Some of what's in this book was in the earlier book I wrote that we've talked about before, which is that we're not as sprawling as people think we are. We're actually relatively dense for being a city based on single-family homes. And I think it is possible to further densify those neighborhoods by adding granny flats and more units, by redeveloping a lot of the big box shopping centers as multifamily areas. And I think that, coupled with the advent of autonomous cars, probably mostly alternative fuel autonomous cars, will allow the suburban fabric to survive and adapt. That doesn't mean autonomous cars take the place of mass transit, which I think we need more of and has been more successful than light rail has been more successful than I thought it would be when I wrote the first book.
Not more than John thought it would be. John, follow up on that, would you?
Well, first, it's an excellent radio show. I just don't want people to take this, the quick Grady take. Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that suburbia is with us. We have enormous sunk costs in it. It's not going to change overnight. But you can retrofit parts of suburbia to provide some variety. One of the things that Phoenix is so unusual in is that it's so hard to compare it to any other city in the country because it let its downtown essentially die and is rebuilding it kind of on a suburban basis. And so where Phoenix is competing against all these cities for talent and capital that have plenty of single-family houses and plenty of malls and plenty of freeways, but they also have cool downtowns and they have cool urban boutiques retrofitted into their suburbs like Denver's done with its light rail in places like Inglewood and Littleton. So, yeah, we need to be thinking about how do we, A, retrofit suburbia some, and B, wean ourselves off these massive subsidies for sprawl.
So, John, I wish you had been here over the weekend. The American Planning Association, which is all the city planners in America, the national conference was in Phoenix, started Friday, just ended yesterday. And I have to say, I think they were all impressed by what's happened in downtown Phoenix. It was packed. There were people on the streets. I was in a bar Sunday night, and you couldn't get a seat. You know, as someone who has worked in downtown Phoenix since the 1970s, it's getting better. It's got a ways to go. But I think these guys from all over the country were genuinely surprised at what downtown Phoenix was like.
Grady, I have to come back to what we're talking about with growth, because as John mentioned, this has been a place that has been so dependent on population growth to keep going. Can we continue to have population growth and also be resilient at the same time without stretching the bounds of sustainability?
Yeah, you know, one of the chapters in the book is sort of about the nature of our boom and bust economy, which is we consciously designed this place around a boom and bust economy. And I go to all these real estate seminars at which people are debating, when is the recovery going to arrive? Well, the news for those guys is this is it. We are in the recovery. We have recovered. We are not going to boom the way we did in 2007, 2008. And hopefully that means we're not going to bust the way we did in 2011. I think we are in a period, partly it's just the fact that we've got so much critical mass and we've gotten so big, and partly it's that we are moving away from an economy, the primary driver of which is just pure population growth. I think we are seeing some new drivers emerge in our economy other than cheap houses and sunshine. And I think that will moderate both the boom and the bust over time and will be a good thing for Phoenix.
John, what do you make of that?
Well, I partly buy it. Phoenix needs more real headquarters, and especially downtown. One other thing that's going to moderate it is that you're going to have a lot more poor old people. And so, and yes, Arizona in general has a slightly younger population. Those are not the Anglos, but that's another subject. But so much of Phoenix's real estate has depended on people retiring there. Retirement is changing, and it's not going to be the same as it was. So there are many, many of these challenges we have to wrestle with to come out on the other end and say, is this city going to be sustained? Well, sure, in one form or another. Baghdad's still there. But can it leap to Phoenix 3.0, 1.0 being agriculture, 2.0 being real estate and sprawl, and 3.0 being, of course, real estate still there, but at the headwaters of the technology economy, and especially when so many jobs risk being automated.
Grady, 1 minute left.
Yeah, I like the 1.0, 2.0, 3.0 thing. And I do think there are some signs for Arizona 3.0. One of the things that's happening is we are getting more investment in building and I hesitate to use these words call centers, but nevertheless, they are largely based on the fact that we don't have natural disasters like a lot of the country does. And so the State Farm regional headquarters in Tempe, the data centers in Chandler are all based on that. That's a niche we should think about. And there are other niches like that. Alternative energy is one. Proximity to Mexico is one. I think those can form the basis of an Arizona 3.0 economy.
Grady Gamage is the author of the new book, The Future of the Suburban City, Lessons from Sustaining Phoenix. He'll be at Changing Hands, the Phoenix location, to talk about the book April 26th. And John Talton, you can find him at roguecolumnist.com. He's also author of A Brief History of Phoenix. Thank you both, as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Always good to be here.
Thank you, Steve.